Follow MCCP on Facebook at facebook.com/Muslim Community Center of Portland for weekly videos and updates. Stay tuned for Pathways next. Have a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2022 Village Building Convergence, happening Friday, June 3rd through Sunday, June 12th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. daily in Portland and streaming on the web. The 2022 Village Convergence is 10 days of workshops and presentations around the work of placemaking and community enhancement. Again, that's the 2022 Village Building Convergence, happening Friday, June 3rd through Sunday, June 12th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. daily in Portland and streaming on the web. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Well, we've had a lot of illustrious guests on Pathways in the past few decades, but few as astute and articulate as the man we are visiting with today here on the island of Maui. Our guest is Ralph White, author, pioneer of holistic learning, international speaker on cultural, personal, and social transformation, and a conference director. Ralph's mission is creating a more holistic, ecological, conscious, and just world. He is the author of the memoir, The Jeweled Highway, On the Quest for a Life of Meaning. He is also co-founder of the New York Open Center, America's leading urban institution of holistic learning, where his current role is senior fellow and conference director. The Open Center has presented the major writers and speakers in the fields of wellness, social and ecological change, inner development, world spiritual traditions, art and creativity for over 38 years. And Ralph is an international speaker on all of these topics, as well as the history of the Western tradition. He has made so many appearances on radio and television, both in the United States and internationally, too many to mention. Ralph was born and grew up in Wales in the north of England. After completing a degree in American Studies at the University of Sussex, he came to the United States from Britain in 1970 as a Fulbright Scholar. He was program director of Omega Institute for Holistic Studies in the early 80s. He has taught and lectured in the U.S., Canada, the United Kingdom, Russia, and Poland. He has also organized many major national and international conferences on a broad range of spiritual and alternative themes, and is considered to be one of the most knowledgeable holistic learning professionals in America. The national and international conferences he has both organized and directed are on a great variety of esoteric subjects and too numerous to list here. The series of international conferences known as Esoteric Quests are widely considered the leading events in the world on the Western tradition. Established by Ralph in the 1990s, they are now entering their 25th year. He also created the training now called The Art of Dying, which started as a conference in 1995 and evolved into a training that continues to be one of the Open Center's popular offerings. Hello, Ralph, and welcome to the Pathways program.
Good to see you, Paula. Lovely to be here.
There are so many things to talk about with you, and our show is only a half hour long, so we'll do the best we can. But let's start with the Open Center, a center of holistic learning and world culture. It was founded 38 years ago, and please describe the story behind that.
Well, New York City did not have a major center for more holistic consciousness. So there are little small places here and there, but it needed a focal point, something that could be a true oasis, not to mention a powerhouse for these kinds of ideas entering the culture. 38 years ago, this was all very new. So it was to do with me and another guy called Walter Beebe. Between us, we formed a good partnership. He had assets and resources. I had a whole background. I'd been program director of Omega Institute upstate and other places before that. So we were a good combo to get it started. And lo and behold, against the odds and certainly against our expectations, it has gone on for pushing 40 years now.
Wow, it's amazing. Deepak Chopra once said, quote, "The Open Center is one of the few places that actually does encourage a holistic approach to life."
Oh, did he say that? That's very nice. Well, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Well, tell us about your history, philosophically, academically. How did you, you're a kind of an entrepreneur. You've started so many things. None of it has been commercial.
It's all been nonprofit.
And so, you are a spiritual and cultural entrepreneur. How did that happen?
I don't know. I never thought of myself as a cultural entrepreneur, but I see how you could make that case. I just wanted to make a difference. It all started for me, in a way, when I was... When I was 23, I hitchhiked from Vancouver to Machu Picchu, and after being in the mountains for the Andes for a couple of months, I came down to sea level again. I saw modern industrial civilization, even in the form of a Peruvian city, Arequipa, and I saw it with fresh eyes, I guess. And I had one of those intuitive moments that made very clear to me, in the depths of my being, that Western industrial civilization was destroying the biosphere and wrecking our own psyches as well, and that we had to create an alternative. So you could say since I was 24, I think I was then, I've seen in a sense what needed to happen, and all these vehicles, these centers, these programs, these conferences and the like, they've all been devoted to that end of a shift in consciousness. Mm-hmm. Because we can see now the perils that have been created by this materialistic, superficial, consumerist, growth-oriented culture that we have that's producing, the gargantuan climate change, etc. So that's how it all started. And
so in your early 20s, you hitchhiked from Vancouver, B.C. to Peru.
Yes, I had to fly over a little bit of Panama in the middle, but yes, I did.
Uh-huh. And then you had an awakening.
Yes, coming back down after being in Bolivia and Peru for a couple of months, wherever it was.
And was that aided or assisted by any kind of psychedelic?
No, that wasn't actually. I think it was just the experience of being in the mountains, those vast starlit skies. Bolivia is the most mystical place, it's like the Tibet of South America. And then just seeing modern industrial civilization with fresh eyes again. I mean, by that time I'd been traveling for 9 months, of course, so I think I was in a somewhat altered state. But no, I was completely sober in every way. I remember it very vividly. So it was just, I didn't set off consciously on some kind of vision quest. I didn't even know the term vision quest, but you would say that moment of clarity or vision came to me then. And it's, I feel it's as true today as it was then.
And were you already a student of Rudolf Steiner?
No, I got into Rudolf Steiner here in Hawaii, actually. Uh-huh. I mean, I was aware of him, but his work didn't really engage me until I was here and I hiked the Nepali Coastline Trail in Kauai after the first year at the Open Center. I was fried. I poured my lifeblood, my etheric vitality, to use esoteric language, into creating the Open Center, and I was fried. Uh-huh. And some friend of mine suggested that I do the Nepali Coastline Trail. For people who don't know, it's a wonderful ancient Hawaiian trail in the northwest of Kauai, the Garden Island. And I did it and just had an exquisite, exquisite experience. And when I got back from that, I was on the beach, Haina Beach, and picked up a book by Steiner, and that's what opened up the tension between East and West. That's what opened up the world of Steiner to me.
Okay, so I'm trying to get to the root of who you are as your life has manifested, as I would call this cultural or spiritual entrepreneur, you know, the Open Center, the Art of Dying, the Esoteric Quest, the Holistic Centers Network, all these things that you either founded or co-founded. What kind of person did that? What's a Fulbright scholar?
Oh, Fulbright scholar, that was something I got. You know, I didn't care. I'd done a degree in American studies in England at the University of Sussex in the late 60s there, when it was one of the few places that you could do American studies. So I wanted to do something new instead of English and history and all that. So, but I didn't know anybody in America, so I had to find a way to get here. And so it was a long rigmarole of filling out forms and writing essays and going out for interviews in Berkeley Square in London with a bunch of guys in pinstripe suits and Oxford accents and so on. So I think it was helpful to me that I had a degree in American studies. So that's how it came through for me, something called the US-UK Educational Commission.
But where did you get your spiritual background? I mean, you didn't grow up in a spiritual environment.
No, I didn't. And I grew up in, you know...
Was it the hippie movement, the counterculture?
Yes, I would say the turning point for me was in the 60s, late 60s in England when I was at university, where I did have a psychedelic experience, just one, but that was enough to make me realize that there was deeper reality beyond this. When I was a pissed off teenage existentialist who saw, I mean, my father was in the thick of the Second World War, my grandfather thick of the trenches of the First World War, the Holocaust, you know, how could you see any kind of deeper reality in the midst of that horror? So I had to have a transcendent experience to open me up to that possibility. And then I came to the States. I took a trip down Route 66 my first Christmas from Chicago to LA, and that turned the deserts of New Mexico, Arizona, the starlit skies, the vastness, the silence, that had a big impact. And only 50 years later when I did my DNA, did I find out that I'm 14% Native American, which for a guy born in Wales, his mother was born in Northern Ireland, is pretty amazing. But I know it's true.
It is amazing.
It is amazing. But no wonder that's how I had my big spiritual breakthrough, really, in the Southwest and deserts.
So in the 90s, you created a couple of things, this Art of Dying conference. Let's start with that. Tell us about how that came about.
Well, with the Open Center had been going about 10 years at that point, I was feeling we needed to go deeper, and, you know, just the regular weekend workshops and ongoing courses were not enough. It was time to just take on some serious themes. And our friend Bob Thurman, you know, Robert Thurman, author of many books on Tibetan Buddhism, he had just published a new translation of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. So we had a conversation with Bob and his wife Nana. And of course, they're the parents of Uma Thurman, who are not familiar with them. And we said, let's do something together. So Tibet House and the Open Center cooperated on creating the first Art of Dying conference. And it blew our minds. It totally sold out, 700 people in Midtown Manhattan. Boom. And just like that. And most of them, 85%, were actually professionals in the field. So hospice workers, some doctors, nurses, bereavement counselors, psychotherapists, okay. Social workers, etc. So that's how it began. It was like, oh my God, this was a phenomenal success. I mean, nothing like it had been done. It was totally pioneering.
And was it rooted in the Tibetan Buddhist philosophy, reincarnation? And
no, it wasn't rooted in that, but it obviously was very sympathetic. Mm-hmm. So it was good to have a spiritual partner there that, through, and of course, the Tibetan Book of the Dead had played a role in us doing it. So it certainly warmly embraced that, but I by that time was been deeply into Rudolf Steiner for years, so I wanted to include that perspective, because for me, Steiner's work and his lectures on the journey of the soul between death and rebirth is incredibly beautiful and deep. I wish it were much more widely known, and it's a good complement to the Tibetan perspective and extremely lucid.
You know, I was in a talk, I attended a lecture by Robert Thurman, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, and the topic was, how are you preparing for a favorable rebirth? You know, and I always thought, it took me by surprise, because I thought, well, I thought the whole point was to not have to be reborn, you know, to become enlightened, you know, this kind of perfectionistic spiritual ambition, to become enlightened in this lifetime. But he's going, you know, no, if you can achieve a more favorable rebirth, that's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, it's just not to step off the wheel of samsara. This is a difference in the Western esoteric perspective on reincarnation. Say, from Steiner's point of view, we're involved in an evolutionary process. We want to reincarnate, because human beings will be reincarnating into the future as they have in the past. And it's all to do with this vast picture, the evolution of consciousness and who we are as spiritual cosmic beings, not just these characters wandering around in earth suits for 70 or 80 or 90 years wondering what the hell to do. So, that's how it all began.
Okay. Now, around that same time, you started up the Esoteric Quest.
Yes.
Now, I have to say, as a disclaimer, I've been on two of the esoteric quests, and they were just fantastic. But please describe what that's about for our audience.
Yes. Well, this began the same year as The Art of Dying, 95. I have been feeling, you know, in the holistic world, there's so much attention, and quite understandably, obviously, I support it 100%, given to the Eastern paths, to Buddhism, to yoga, or to shamanism. But the Western esoteric tradition, which is beautiful and deep, had been really largely marginalized or left to individual groups.
I don't think most people even realize it exists.
No, exactly. So it's compared to yoga and Buddhism and mindfulness and all the rest of it, it gets almost no play. So I felt it was time to give it a fair crack of the whip. So it coincided with the fact that after a centers gathering, a holistic centers gathering in Germany in the early 90s, right after communism, a friend and I, who I'd met, she was from a German center called Zist, which is kind of the German Essel and the Center for Individual and Social Therapy. We said, why don't we have a little adventure, you know, and go to Czechoslovakia? So we did, because nobody did, and we stumbled into this little town, Český Krumlov, at 11 o'clock at night, and it turned out to be the southern Bohemian Mecca of alchemists. Wow. That had been preserved behind the Iron Curtain for 60 years. It was almost completely unknown. If people went to Czechoslovakia, it was bigger to Prague and maybe a few other places, but nobody got down into southern Bohemia. So I stumbled across this gem from the Western esoteric tradition. Some of our listeners may be familiar with John Dee, the Renaissance magus, who was the advisor to Queen Elizabeth, you know, in Elizabethan Shakespearean times. He was there. He was protected actually by Count Wilhelm Rosenberg while he was spent 6 or 7 mysterious years in Bohemia. So anyway, I realized this was a tremendous place with significant history, the 30 Years' War, everything. And that period that the great historian, the English historian Francis Yates, called the Rosicrucian Enlightenment, we don't normally associate those words, which was the last time that magic, alchemy, Kabbalah, Hermetic philosophy, Neoplatonism, is the last time they all came together.
And were allowed to publish.
Right, and because then we went into the 30 Years' War in 1618, Battle of the White Mountain in 1620, this horrendous war between Protestants and Catholics all across Europe for 30 nightmarish years. And unfortunately, by the time we stumbled out of that magical worldview that still brought science and spirituality together, like the alchemists, of mm-hmm. course, it was all over, and it was the modern mechanistic, materialistic worldview of Descartes and Newton and so on. So Yeah, that was special because it's the last time in the West where you could say holistic in the broadest term, both spiritual and scientific, were in expression. So it was wonderful. That was incredible. Gnosis magazine called it an esoteric Woodstock because I invited everybody I knew and admired in the Western tradition, and everybody said yes.
Oh, that was the first esoteric.
Yeah, and I mean, nobody had ever heard of Chesky Cromwell, but I must have written a good letter or something. But it turned out to be an outrageous event. It was phenomenal. I will never forget it. Little did I know that it would seed a 25 years and counting series of events.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to do one again next year.
We are. We're going to do one. We would have done, you know, we were planning to do one 2 years ago, but of course the pandemic intervened. We have done an online one. But yes, next year, spring of next year, May, June, is going to be an esoteric quest in Portugal, actually followed up by the we're going to traverse the Camino of Santiago de Compostela, the great pilgrim route. There's a southern route, actually, that goes up from Portugal. And we're going to be mostly in Tomar, which was the center of the Knights Templar.
Oh.
And, you know, after the Knights, probably some of our listeners know the horrible end that the Knights Templar met, or their leaders in France, with Philip le Bel in alliance with the Catholic Church, totally suppressing them. He wanted their wealth. But in Portugal, after that, there was a troubadour king, King Denis, who had some kind of good relationship with the Pope, and he allowed the Portuguese Templars to basically change their name to the Knights of Christ and to reoccupy all the old Templar territories, their castles, like the incredible one in Tomar, their chapels, continue their work. And some people, I'm sure, will have heard of Prince Henry the Navigator. He was the first Western explorer to head out to the Azores, down the coast of Africa, and so on. He was actually the Grand Master of this order. So we'll look at that, and then we'll follow the Camino, the great pilgrim route, from the southern direction. People think of it all as coming in over the Pyrenees and then Lorton rather than Spain, but actually there's a long-established southern route up through Portugal.
That's fascinating.
So we're going to follow.
Does it end in the same place?
Yes, it ends in Compostela, you know, through the Douro Valley, into Porto, up through a few other, a little town to Compostela, and we're actually going to go right to the end of the route, which is not quite, it's called a Fisterra or Finisterre, as the name implies, the ends of the earth, the actual end of that whole promontory, the northwest promontory in Spain.
Edge of Europe, right?
A western edge. Yeah.
Western edge.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, now tell us about the Holistic Centers Network. There's so many things to talk to you about. You founded this a few decades ago, too.
Yeah. Well, we came together fortuitously. Some of our listeners will be familiar with Omega Institute, you know, in the Hudson Valley, and Esalen Institute, of course, in Big Sur, California, and the Open Center in New York. And then we were joined by Hollyhock, which is a Canadian center on Cortez Island in British Columbia. So it was initially just a gathering of a handful of centers, but we came together serendipitously, and it was such fun. It was just, and we're all doing this together, you know, we're part of something larger. Do we want to replicate the old capitalist competitive thing? Can we be supportive? Can we be recognized that the pie is expanding, as indeed it is? More and more people are awakening to this kind of stuff. So it was just a good cooperative experience, and then it went on throughout the 90s, because that also... Oh, no, that started about 85, after the first year.
Was Findhorn involved from the very beginning?
No.
But you were one of early Findhorn people.
Yes, I had, after I was in South America and California, and I wound up deciding it was time to go back to Britain. I'd been gone for 3.5 years, and if I was going to go back, I was going to walk the ancient ley lines. And I'd heard about this place, Findhorn, you know, up in the north of Scotland, where the primary spiritual path was attunement to nature, because I've never been into gurus personally and that kind of thing. Spiritual teachers, Rudolf Steiner always says, think of me as your spiritual friend. I'm not interested in being anybody's guru. This is a time of freedom. So anyway, I liked the attunement to that. I thought it's time to, you know, I love the Celtic world, being half Welsh and mostly half Welsh and half Irish. And so I went up there, I liked the people. I met lots of, I have lifelong friends. You and I share one of them.
Yeah.
And it's been a blessing.
Yeah, and the founders of Findhorn had a vision of these thousand points of light or whatever.
They did. They called it the Network of Light. The founders of Findhome were two English people, Peter and Eileen Caddy, and their Canadian friend, Dorothy MacLean, on a little windswept trailer park in the north of Scotland.
Right.
And yes, Eileen, who was a real... A genuine mystic. She did have a vision of a network of light, of points of light around the planet, and it seemed unlikely because she was the only place she could meditate was the public toilet on the caravan park. So it's you know, not the most distinguished surroundings perhaps for this cosmic vision to come. But of course now the network, I wouldn't say they're exactly the same.
No.
I wrote a chapter in a book that Findhorn did called Faces of Findhorn, which is about the network of light. So I've always had that feeling that there's a global consciousness movement.
Right.
And then it's been my destiny to be involved with Findhorn in the 70s, with Omega in the early 80s, and then with the Open Center ever since. So I personally experienced three senses. I know that they have their differences, of course, but ultimately we're all working towards
Oregon
the same goal.
Oregon has got a fairly prominent one.
Yeah, Brighton Bush Hot Springs.
Hot Springs, yeah, is one of the members of the Holistic Centers Network. Peter Moore used to be the executive director of the chairman of the board, etc. And you founded that whole thing just serendipitously, like you said.
Well, I used to see a group of people came together, and then I sustained it. So it didn't go out of incarnation. It moved to Europe in the 90s. We did a lot of stuff in Russia and Eastern Europe because right after communism, people were spiritually hungry.
Oh, and you've taken it to China, too.
Yes, and I managed to help various seed small emerging holistic consciousness centers in Russia and Eastern Europe in the 90s and so on. So, yeah, we've taken it all around. And then China, where, you know, you and I were in China together, the first international holistic wellness forum. It was like a Pink Floyd concert. I'll never forget going up on stage with the flashing lights and the woman dressed like a geisha leading you up to the stage and the swinging boom lights.
You know, in China, they thought of, you know, this this whole holistic health, yoga, etc., as a kind of a luxury thing. It was something that not everybody could afford. It was kind of they thought of it as a something that the wealthy people could enjoy, and they made it part of this community, this gated community.
Well, that was one specific place, the House of I, that was specifically intended to appeal to the wealthy and to American-style corporations.
Right.
But they were just, you know, I went all over China the year before that with a friend who I met, a Chinese friend who had graduated from the California Institute of Integral Studies, and she introduced me to holistic pioneers all over China.
Okay, so we've only got a couple more minutes, and you know, we didn't talk about climate change, we didn't talk about the pandemic. I'd love to get your opinions on everything. Mm. But what would you like to talk about for the next 2 minutes? So you're a politically engaged person.
Well, I would encourage our listeners, if they want to get a handle on what the hell is going on in Ukraine and what Russia and Putin are all about, you know, ever since I spent time in Russia in the 90s, I've had a deep connection to that culture. And just Google this guy, Alexander Dugin, D-U-G-I-N, the fascist esoteric philosopher who has a big influence on Putin's inner circle, you know, the FSB, the successors to the KGB, and his book, Foundations of Geopolitics, has been widely disseminated in the upper reaches of the Russian general staff. And it sees Russia as a holy Russia, as the center of a Eurasian state, and Dugin had three primary geopolitical agendas. Separate the UK from the UK and Britain, these decadent Atlanticist powers, North America, you know, we believe in rights for gays, equal rights for women, multicultural societies. He's a traditionalist. Dugin shares with Steve Bannon an interest in the traditionalist philosophers, Julius Evola, the quasi-fascist philosopher close to Mussolini. So I just check out Alexander Dugin. I think it's a key, if you grasp what he's about, it gives you a real insight into that question, what does Putin want? And then, of course, you know, behind everything, the massive climate crisis that we're all facing, that is the sort of mega crisis that dominates everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had that the International Climate Commission, you know, it just issued a report a few months ago, or 6 weeks ago, saying, we are in a total, this is the last chance, you know, we must turn things around, we have 9 months. It appeared on the front pages for one day. Meanwhile, you know, Will Smith slapping Chris Rock was major news for like a week.
Right.
And it's just a terrible indictment of things.
Well, we don't have any more time.
Yeah.
It's amazing how fast it goes. I want to make sure to tell our listeners about your Twitter feed.
Yes.
Which is at Ralph_White.
Correct.
And so in terms of like what's going on and current events and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, I really, you know, I haven't tried to expand my base much. I think I'm going to have to do that because I'm thinking of doing a whole Substack and podcast. So the Twitter feed, yeah, Ralph_White. The website, ralphwhite.net. And of course, opencenter.org.
Right. ralphwhite.net is the website.
Yes.
And I encourage people to follow you and pay attention to you because your mind is unbelievable. And I'm so grateful that you were on the show, Ralph. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure, Paul.
We have run out of time. And for those who may have tuned in late, this is Paul O'Brien. And you can replay the entire interview anytime you want via the internet at divination.com or kboo.fm. Today we've been visiting with Ralph White, founder of the Open Center, the Esoteric Quest, the Art of Dying, the Holistic Centers Network, oh my God, and author of a great book, which I thoroughly enjoyed. We didn't get to talk about that. But I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed on the internet at www.kboo.fm every other Sunday morning at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. And even better, podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes, Paulo's YouTube channel, and I have to apologize, we're not going to have any video this time, and the other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and Podcast, and thanks again to Ralph White and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.